A Breakfast Huddle with Elliot Danker, Yasmin Yonkers, and Ryan Hwan. Replay from Money FM 89.3.
It's the Breakfast Huddle on Money FM 89.3. Now, the Singapore FinTech Festival concluded last week. It's the world's largest FinTech festival with about 40,000 participants from more than 100 countries. And according to Education Minister Ong Ye Kung, one of the reasons why the event was so successfully held here is because Singapore is a great springboard to the region with 3,000 financial institutions, including every major global bank located in the country. Now, one bank that is definitely involved in the world of fintech is DBS. We'll find out more about that in just a while. But more importantly, DBS is celebrating their 50th anniversary this year. And we want to know all about their journey. This morning, I'm very privileged to have the chance to speak to the CEO of DBS, Mr. Piyush Gupta. Good morning, Piyush, and thank you so much for your time.
Very happy to be on the channel.
So, DBS, celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. For you, when you look back on this incredible journey, what are the standout achievements for DBS?
Well, you got to go back to the nature of DBS. It was the Development Bank of Singapore.
Okay.
And I think it's safe to say that in the first 20-odd years of our existence, we did a stellar job helping in that developmental agenda. So the first big, large shopping malls, the IPO of Singtel and Singapore Airlines, the large buildings in this country, they were all financed by DBS. But DBS also helped with the capitalizing of the SME community. Mm-hmm. So DBS used to take equity stakes in many of these companies to help them prosper and grow. So I'd say development agenda, a strong check. In the late 90s, with the merger with POSB, we expanded this whole agenda with the tagline, neighbors first, bankers second. Today, we not only continue to bank 90-95% of Singaporeans, but what's more remarkable, we continue to bank them, notwithstanding the fact that 50% of them are not profitable to the bank. So this idea of having a social mission and the idea of continuing to be there for the heartlanders and for the rest of the people who need us, including migrant labor, I think that's another area where DBS deserves good marks for what it's achieved over the years. And I'd say finally, in more recent times, our ability to be able to expand beyond the shores of Singapore to really build a franchise which is recognized now as a regional powerhouse. And frankly, in the last couple of years, to get on the global stage, to be recognized increasingly as one of the finest banks in the world, I think that's a third area in which you have to say DBS has been able to, deliver a third check.
Well, it's been quite an incredible 50-year journey and more to come. Let's talk about you. You joined DBS 9 years ago, November 2009. What would you say are your proudest moments of these past 9 years, and what were some of the challenges you faced?
You know, I'd say if you talk to most people, whether internal to DBS or external in the market, they will comment on a change in the culture of the bank. And frankly, changing cultures is perhaps one of the hardest things you can do, particularly in the organizations which have been around for a long period of time. Some 4 or 5 years ago, we set up this ambition of being rated the best bank in the world. Mm-hmm. What was really dramatic to me was that the 200 people who were around that room at that point in time were almost unanimous in raising their hands and saying, yes, we can do it. This culture which says we have the confidence to be world-class, we have the confidence to succeed, we have the confidence to really establish the new standards, that's the change in the culture.
Would you say confidence is the most important factor to change culture?
Well, it takes a lot of things. But I think culture is the outcome.
Okay.
It's not an input. I'm saying, you know, we're a lot more confident culture today. We're a lot more entrepreneurial, risk-taking, a lot more confident, a lot more being willing to take on a lot of challenges.
This morning, we're speaking with the CEO of DBS, Mr. Piyush Gupta. Your third quarter net profit, it went up by 72% to 1.41 billion Sing dollars, but it missed analyst estimates by 2.1%. Could I get your thoughts on the latest results, and perhaps if you could share with us your business outlook for the year ahead?
Well, first, a quick comment. I think this thing about missing estimates by 2.1% is really one of the big problems with the modern day capitalism. You know, I think this is the short-termism and the focus on somebody came up with a number and were you 1% better or 1% worse is really not a smart way to think about business. We were actually quite pleased overall with the performance in the quarter because there have been some headwinds, as you know, around the world and including Asia. The headwinds really come from uncertainty.
Okay.
The impact of the trade tariffs has not been that apparent in the real economy, but the impact on market sentiment has been very visible. There's been a sell-off in equities, there's been a sell-off in currencies. Now, in that kind of environment, to continue to deliver steady, stable growth is actually quite pleasing. As we go forward, I think it's quite clear that you're going to see some macroeconomic slowdown in 2019. IMF came up with a number of 3.7 relative to the earlier number of 3.9. And it sounds small, but I think there will be some headwinds. A lot of them are to do with increasing rates in the US.
Okay.
A lot of the headwinds are to do with deleveraging in China. And some are to do with what I said earlier, an environment of uncertainty, geopolitical uncertainty. So we are already guiding for a little bit of a slowdown in our loan growth. We think mortgages in Singapore will be somewhat slower because of the property measures. And we think trade finance might be somewhat slower as well. That notwithstanding, we continue to be quite confident that the underlying drivers of our business are quite robust. Our wealth management business, our cash management business, our structured lending business, you know, these businesses actually continue to have momentum and we continue to gain market share in many of our activities. So we are still relatively confident about bottom line outcomes for next year.
You mentioned interest rates, and of course, everyone keeps talking about the trade tariffs. Those are ultimately going to be challenges. But what are the opportunities do you see in this current landscape?
Well, interest rates is an opportunity.
Okay.
You know, for DBS, we are very positively correlated to interest rate cycles. And if you wind up with 2, 3, even 4 rate hikes next year, that will have a very beneficial impact on our bottom line. So I think that's a clear positive. I think overall the macro trend in Asia of the creation of wealth is secular.
Okay.
And I don't think it's going to be derailed anytime soon. Which means that if you have a credible wealth management business, you should continue to see steady long-term growth. We expect that to continue to happen. In recent times, we've also built out a very competitive cash management franchise.
Okay.
We've just been rated the world's best in terms of cash management customer satisfaction. By leveraging digital technologies with cash management, we're actually able to win business and market share that should be beneficial to us. I'd say overall, the whole digital transformation continues to be an opportunity.
Okay.
It allows us to, you know, find more digital customers who give us greater income. It allows us to get greater efficiency in terms of cost of delivery. And I think as long as we can continue to transform faster than competition, we should do quite well.
Actually, since you brought up digital transformation, I know you're very passionate about this. FinTech Festival concluded last week. How has FinTech impacted the financial sector in terms of opportunities and challenges? And I think more importantly, how has DBS ridden this FinTech wave?
Well, you know, fintech, more generally technology, has been a game changer for every industry, and it's not any different for financial services. For one, you think about the smartphone. In the past, you went to a bank. Today, the bank goes with you in your pocket.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of difference to the way you acquire customers, the way you deal with customers, in what context, in what location, how the customer can transact with you, at what cost point, how you engage with the customer and give them recommendations and new things to do. So everything changes as a consequence of the technology. More fundamentally, as I said, we are changing our customer acquisition models. So today, more than a half of our customers get acquired electronically.
Okay.
We are changing our transacting models. We're killing paper. So things happen instantly with instant fulfillment. And we're beginning to use big data and artificial intelligence to be able to drive recommendations and choices for customers based on insights that we would not have been able to do in the past. We're also actually doing a lot more in terms of working with partners. In the past, banks rarely work with partners, but we today created a whole ecosystem approach with the partnership model. That's a big change as well.
This morning, we're speaking with the CEO of DBS, Mr. Piyush Gupta. This partnership model, especially outsourcing, has it helped DBS advance in terms of technology? Would it have done okay without the partnerships?
Well, we have partnerships of two kinds.
Sure.
One is we have partnerships with providers who help us create capabilities. And you know, even though we have a lot of engineers, we have 5,000 or 6,000 software engineers in-house, but there is no question there are thousands and thousands of startups out there who are doing very good work. Now, we're working with external companies allows us to amplify our own capabilities. So what we do now is we work with partners who help us create product, we package it together, and then we can take a better offering out to our customers. The other side where we look at partners, though, is on the distribution and on the customer value proposition.
Okay.
So we work with companies, we work with a telecom company, for example, in the region, who allows us, working with their customers, to come up with a more advanced way of lending and distributing to their customer base. We announced recently a new partnership with Gojek. As you know, they're into drive hailing apps, they're into food delivery apps. We're going to use that partnership to be able to distribute payment products, our lending products, our insurance products into a very different kind of customer base, as an example. So you have partnerships in the distribution and customer acquisition side, which can be quite beneficial to us as well.
I've always noticed your passion when you talk about fintech. I'd like to ask a personal question. What is your vision for fintech in, say, the next 5 years?
It's kind of hard to say. I think technology changes so fast that it's tough to put a pinpoint on what happens.
Sure.
But I think the two or three things which seem to me likely to be complete game changers, data and artificial intelligence is undoubtedly one.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is going to have the capacity or the possibility of changing everything. And harnessing data, harnessing AI, harnessing machine learning can obviously do a lot of good. It can also do a lot of bad if you're not thoughtful about how you apply it. So I think that's one area that things will change distinctly.
Since we're on the topic of the future, there's been speculation among financial market experts, people saying that the next financial crisis could be around the corner, some say as early as the first quarter of 2020. What's your personal thoughts on this, personal opinion?
I think most of the literature and commentators you refer to are talking about a recession as opposed to a financial crisis.
Okay.
And I have to caution, recessions are normal. Recessions, you know, the world has up cycles and down cycles, is the nature of macroeconomies. And we are today already in the second largest bull cycle since the Second World War. The bull cycle is long in the tooth. It's not unexpected that, you know, over the next year, 2 years, you should start seeing a recessionary cycle kick through. But a recessionary cycle is not cataclysmic. It's not the end of the world. And so you just have to pace through the down cycles and then you get an up cycle again. Now, could you have a cataclysmic financial crisis of the order of magnitude of 07, 08 or 98? I mean, nothing's impossible. But I wouldn't bet on that.
Okay.
I don't see a massive cataclysmic cycle, a shock coming through the system anytime soon.
With regard to recession, how has DBS prepared for it?
You know, one of the things when you're an operating entity is that you have to have the capacity to work through cycle.
Okay.
I think it's hard to make strategies with, say, I will grow this quarter and I'll stop growing the next quarter, because life doesn't work like that. So when you build your business models, you have to build your business models recognizing that they are long-term averages.
Okay.
And then in some parts of the cycle, you'll be better. In some parts of the cycle, you'll be worse. That's our general philosophy. We don't try to pull back and yank back every time we see some headwinds in the environment. Now, having said that, like everybody, we're somewhat thoughtful when we are going into a slow part of the cycle. We'll do more stress testing, we do more portfolio reviews, we start working with customers ahead of time to see how we can better structure the facilities. So we have been doing things of that sort to prepare us for what might be a slower economic cycle over the next year or two.
I'm very intrigued by this next topic, and I'll tell you why in just a while. I'd like to discuss talent with you. What do you look for when it comes to the people you hire?
There's a lot of things we look for, but let me try and answer it this way. I have a model in my head, which I call five I's. And there's the five I's I look at when I'm looking for people who can stand out and be leaders. The first of it of these is individual accountability. So I look for people who, from the experience and from their attitude, are willing to take the ball and run with it, as opposed to defining a narrow circumference around what their role or responsibilities need to be. The second I call initiative. So I look for people who have the willingness to drive their own agenda, as opposed to just being order takers and working on other people's agenda. The third I is innovation.
Okay.
So I look for people who are willing to question the status quo. So people who are willing to redefine the norms and how things need to be done, or why things are done, question why things are done the way they're done today. The fourth I is inspiration. So I look for people who have the capacity to inspire others. And at the heart of the inspiration is often a sense of empathy. So people who can empathize with others but inspire others to go a particular way in a particular direction. And the fifth eye I call intent. And if I look for people who are grounded, who have a sense of true north, who have a sense of purpose and understanding of what they're trying to do. So DBS is a company where the culture, where the sense of purpose is very deeply ingrained. We started off with that, you know, as a development bank. We want to do good things for real economies and real people. So we're kind of wary about getting a bunch of prima donnas and cowboys into the system.
Well, we are going to talk about a cowboy next. And you did mention innovation. It has led to other sectors hiring out of the box. And we recently spoke to your head of innovation, Vidyut Dumra, who used to be a Bollywood producer. He was an entrepreneur. And when I asked him what his experience with regard to finance was, he said he owned a credit card. What are your thoughts on hiring these non-traditional tech, non-traditional finance people?
First, I must caution you that banking is not that much about finance.
Okay.
95% of the jobs in banking require common sense more than deep knowledge of financial matters. It's always been the case. And therefore, I found in my experience, you can take liberal arts graduates and they are excellent bankers. We take engineers and they make excellent bankers. So there's already been a sense of, in my mind, diversity around the kind of people we need. But you're right that in recent times, we've started going even further afield. So we've been hiring people with ethnographic research backgrounds, people who can understand why people do the things they do and how they behave. We're hiring design people. We have a whole design team from 17 different countries whose whole focus is on design and design skills. We'd never have thought of that. We're hiring a lot more data scientists and data analytics to be able to understand and deal with the data issues that we have. So we are hiring a different breed of people. To me, I think the key thing is your attitude and your aptitude. Do you have fire in the belly? Do you have the five eyes I talked about? Do you have a willingness to learn? Do you work well in teams? As long as you have those attributes, then we can actually make you into a good productive resource for the bank.
You did announce a major management reshuffle recently. Could you elaborate a little on that, why there was a need to have this reshuffle?
Jeanette Wong, one of our senior executives, has been wanting to retire for a few years.
Okay.
And I was able to persuade her to stay on for the last couple of years. But we agreed that end of 2018 would be a good time for her to start actually moving on to do something. As she says, she wants to smell the roses. And that's what actually catalyzed her move. Now, the second part of the question, the subtext, is why internal moves?
Yeah.
And that really reflects our abiding belief that we have to be able to groom our own timber. We've been very focused on this over the last 7-8 years. We have a very robust talent management program. We have a very robust internal mobility program at every step in the organization. For example, if something called 2+2, if you've done 2 years in your job and you want to move, your boss must release you within 2 months. They can't hold on to you. But all of this is in the belief that the more people move around, the more robust we'll be as a company, the better our management bench strength will be. And it's in pursuit of that and helping people develop and grow that we were able to actually take all of our the moves required, stemming from Jeanette's resignation, and then fill them through a chain of moves internally.
We've been speaking to Piyush Gupta, DBS Chief Executive Officer. You mentioned earlier at the start of the interview about, you know, culture and the confidence to change a culture. Hiring out of the box, what kind of a part does that play with regard to culture?
It helps, but you know, I'm again a big believer. You don't create cultures by firing everybody and bringing all new people, because then you don't have a culture.
It's not a football team, right?
So I think the many things about the DBS culture, which was very good, yeah, and very special. I spoke to you about this whole sense of purpose. Another very nice thing about the DBS culture has always been the sense of collaboration. It's a very harmonious culture. So people are not political, people don't backstab. The idea was to take that culture and then evolve it into some other aspirational elements that we weren't so good at. One was this idea of risk-taking and entrepreneurship. The idea that it's okay to make some mistakes,
okay,
and you learn by doing. So we wanted to try and add that to the culture of the bank. There's the idea of being more decisive, right, you know, having individual accountability, being responsible for decisions. Sometimes it's easy to wind up in a collaborative committee form of culture, so we wanted to make a change to that. The culture in DBS today, therefore, is a very nice blend. It's not just a culture that comes from hiring a lot of new kids. Mm-hmm. It's a culture that has evolved from the strengths that DBS has, but with some mindfulness that there's some areas that we could improve.
And finally, Piyush, you've had a very successful 50 years where DBS is concerned. Where would DBS be in the next 50 years? Where do you see DBS in the next 50 years?
I think 50 years is a long time. Nobody knows what's going to happen to this world between climate change and artificial intelligence in 50 years. But I'll say this, that I think the nature of banking, underlying nature of banking is actually quite immutable. People still need to save money. People still need to move things around, move money around. People still need to borrow to be able to invest in productive activity. I think the nature of how these fundamentals happen will change. Okay. You know, how you borrow, how you save, how you move things around. And I think technology will make a big impact on that. But there will still be intermediaries who perform those functions. You still have a role to play. I think banks like DBS, partly because of our pedigree, we're a AAA country, we're 30% owned by Temasek, we have a tremendous trust base and brand credibility in the region. We have a really good chance of continuing to be in the center of this intermediation process out into the future. So I would say that while 50 years is too long to call, I'm very optimistic and positive about DBS's own prospects. I think we will continue to transform in the way we do things, but hopefully we will continue to be a driver of economic growth, both for Singapore and for the region.
All right, well, thank you so much for your time this morning. We've been speaking to the CEO of DBS, Piyush Gupta.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.